love it when you hear phrases like, I'm reading in A.E. Knox's book, The Unveiling of Jesus Christ. I love this. Listen to this. I'm going to point out the words that I love, embrace, cherish. One of the most notable and important passages to which this rule applies, that is literal possible, fixes the interpretation of the whole prophetic section. Fixes the interpretation. Wouldn't you love to have a fixed interpretation? Wouldn't you love it if words meant something, that they meant one thing and didn't mean anything else? Fixes the interpretation. Wouldn't you love to come away from the book of Revelation with a fixed interpretation that follows a law and a rule of language rather than what some spiritual person on some website says it means? Because it sounds good, or he dreamed it up, or it sounds plausible, or it sounds spiritual, or he got it while he was sleeping, or he got it in a trance, in a swoon. Wouldn't you love to dispense with all that horse crap and get to what it means? It means what it says, unless it's a figure of speech. And if you know figures of speech, by the way, studyshelf.com, they have retypeset Dr. Bollinger's work, which has gone out of print, I think. Apart from Clyde Pilkington, this book would not be available. Figures of Speech in the Bible. It's an expensive book because it's huge, but they reprinted it. Go to studyshelf.com by Dr. Bollinger. Figures of Speech, so helpful. We all want to fix interpretations, because unless we do that, then we deny God's own explanation. One of the great examples to me is what we're going to be talking about in detail, addressing in the book of Revelation, is the seven ecclesias, because it's the first part of the book of Revelation. So we're going to be spending some time there, the prophetic section. And we already learned in the last couple of days some rules of interpretation, right? Literal if possible. Don't explain God's explanations. Look for the word sign. God says it's a sign. I saw this sign. Okay, when John saw this sign. And we're going to apply this now. We're going to take what we learned and see if it works. So, oh boy, I'm struggling here in the bunker, folks. I'm struggling this whole week. So, if you get anything out of me this week, it's a miracle. I got my Bible here, and I'm in Revelation. And let's go to verse 9. I, John, your brother. First of all, John is our brother in a sense, but he's not our brother in that he belongs to the same administration, or that he embraces the same gospel. John's a Jew, and he embraced the gospel of the circumcision, just so you know that. Okay, try to get this here. Right. Joint participant in the affliction and kingdom and endurance in Jesus Christ. I came to be in the island called Patmos because of the word of God, because of the testimony of Jesus Christ. I came to be in spirit in the Lord's day. So, from this point on, he's in the Lord's day. Now, later on, he's going to come back out of the Lord's day. But right now, he's in the Lord's day. So, he's in the freaking future. Okay? He's time traveling. He's not seeing things in the future. No. He's going into the future. Do you see the difference between seeing things in the future and going to the future? It's not hard, because God knows the end from the beginning. And I hear behind me a voice loud as a trumpet saying, what you are observing, important. What John is observing was often explained by the Spirit of God to him, what he was observing. Therefore, what he was observing was not necessarily literal, but what he was observing meant something that was explained. And the explanations are always, always literal. That's a key. God's explanations of figures, of visions, of signs, are literal. And John wrote this in a book. Telling, by plain language. And that's just what he did. Let's go back there, doggone it. the unveiling of Jesus Christ, which God gives to him, John, to show his slaves what must occur swiftly, and he signifies it, dispatching through his messenger to his slave John, who testifies to the word and the testimony of Jesus Christ. He told him plainly. Sometimes it wasn't a sign, but the entire revelation is not a sign. It was a telling of literal things that of figurative things that deserve literal explanations, and got them. Came to be in the Lord's day. I hear behind me a voice, loud as a trumpet, saying, "What you are observing, write into a scroll. Send it to the seven ecclesias, to Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea." These ecclesias, we're getting ahead of ourselves. These ecclesias did not exist in John's time. Well, they might have, but those aren't the ecclesias he's writing to. He's writing to ecclesias that will exist in the Lord's day, because he's in the Lord's day. As evidence of this, one of these ecclesias did not exist in John's day, and it has troubled expositors. I think it was the Church of Laodicea. My internet's down now, so I can't look it up specifically, but I know for a fact, I know that one of these ecclesias listed here did not exist in John's day, and it has puzzled interpreters, expositors, and said, what's the deal here? Here's the deal. It's not going to exist until the Lord's day, that is, in the time that this book applies. Now I turn about and look for the voice which spoke with me, and turning about, I perceive seven golden lampstands. I perceive, write down what you perceived. I perceive seven golden lampstands. That's what he saw. He saw seven lampstands. I know he did. So if you want to say that's literal, okay. He literally saw 12 lampstands, but the lampstands weren't the literal thing as far as understanding what this scroll means. And in the midst of the seven lampstands, one like a son of mankind, dressed in a garment, reaching to the feet and girded about at the breasts with a golden girdle. It was, for instance, look at the word. We're going to go here. His beard, hair, white, as white wool, as snow, as wool. And not white, it's not snow, it's not wool, it's as snow, as wool. Key words there. Eyes as a flame of fire. His eyes were not fire, they were as a flame of fire. Very piercing, in other words. His feet like white bronze. They were like white bronze, his feet. Look at these little clues in here. That's an easy one. That's a simile. It's like white bronze. If it had said his feet were white bronze, is that what he says, white bronze in here? White bronze? Wow, I never heard of that. If his feet were white bronze, that would be a metaphor. His feet are white bronze. Wait a minute. Bronze is bronze. Feet are feet. Yes, but his feet are white bronze. That would be a metaphor, which means we're trying to tell you a picture. We're trying to describe something to you using poetic language. However, it makes it easy here and says that his feet are like white bronze, as fired in a furnace. All these great things. His voice is as the sound of many waters. His voice wasn't waters, it was as the sound. Love these easy explanations here. And he has in his right hand seven stars. Oh, he hasn't, that's part of the vision. He has seven stars in his right hand. Seven stars in the vision. Revelation itself is a vision. Let's go to verse 17. When I perceived him, I felt his feet as dead. He places his right hand on me, saying, "Do not fear. I am the first, the last, the living one. I became dead, lo, living am I for the eons. I have the keys of death and of the unseen." That's true. What's he signifying here? Is this to tell by signs? No, I have the keys of death and the unseen. That's literal as can be. Who's going to make this into a spiritual thing? What do you mean you have the keys of death? Well, it could be, you could say, well, keys, he doesn't have literal keys. Yeah, I'll give you that much. That's a figure. But what the message is literal. In other words, he unlocks death. The keys of death, right? You understand what that means. It's a figure of speech, the keys part. But the death is literal as can be. And of the unseen. In other words, Hades. It isn't seen. What then you perceived and what... Let's say, right then, what you perceived and what they are. And what is about to be occurring. Write what you perceived and what they are. This is cool. Write what you perceived and what they are. Well, I don't know what they are. Well, shut up for a second, because I'm about to tell you what they are. And I'm going to do it soon here. The secret of the seven stars which you perceived in my right hand and the seven golden lampstand. Look at this. Verse 20, chapter 1. Told you we were already in chapter 1, so don't worry about it. The seven stars are messengers and the seven ecclesias. Let me start again. The seven stars are seven messengers of the seven ecclesias, and the seven lampstands are seven ecclesias. All right, I know it's not Friday, but this is too good because I have a revelation for you. Hang on. I, Martin Zender, am a knower of secrets. I am a bringer of the unlocking of mysteries. For I know the meaning of the seven lampstands. Because Jesus Christ explained exactly what they were. The seven lampstands are seven ecclesias, seven churches. Now, if the seven churches represent something, if they're figurative, then we're explaining explanations. Well, I think the churches mean seven ages all throughout time, from the Pentecostal era till now. Isn't that clever? That's my interpretation of what the lampstands are. How about we don't interpret God's interpretations? How about the lampstands are seven churches? Oh, but there is more, my friends. There is more. For I, Martin Zender, know the meaning of the stars. The seven stars, yes, the seven stars, which have puzzled expositors and dreamers and Pentecostals and preterists for years, even, yeah, centuries. And, yeah, millennia, sure, why not? Are you ready for this? The seven stars are seven messengers, celestial beings, translated angels, in the King James Version. That's what they are. I'm not going to explain the celestial beings and what they mean, what they represent, because they don't mean anything. That's what the seven stars are. And I, for one, refuse to explain God's explanations.